What a dream are the 50 or 60 years that have slipped away since we were at the Charterhouse. Thursday the 2nd. I preached at noon at a farmer's house near Brough in Westmoreland. The sun was hot enough, but some shady trees covered both me and most of the congregation. A little bird perched on one of them and sang without intermission from the beginning of the service unto the end. Many of the people came from far, but I believe none of them regretted their labor. Friday the 3rd. In running down one of the mountains yesterday, I got a sprain in my thigh. It was worse today, but as I rode to Barnard Castle, the sun shone so hot upon it that before I came to the town, it was quite well. In the evening, the commanding officer gave orders there should be no exercise, that all the Durham militia, what a contrast, might be at liberty to attend the preaching. Accordingly, we had a little army of officers as well as soldiers, and all behaved well. A large number of them were present at 5 in the morning. Tuesday the 7th, I went down by water to South Shields and preached at noon to far more than could hear. We went after dinner to Tynemouth Castle, a magnificent heap of ruins. Within the walls are the remains of a very large church, which seems to have been of exquisite workmanship. The stones are joined by so strong a cement that, but for Cromwell's cannon, they might have stood 1,000 years. Wesley's wife, ill. Sunday, August 14th. Hearing my wife was dangerously ill, I took chaise immediately and reached the foundry before 1 in the morning. Finding the fever was turned and the danger over, about 2 I set out again and in the afternoon came, not at all tired, to Bristol. Wednesday, September 7th, Penzance. After the early preaching, the Select Society met, such a company of lively believers, full of faith and love, I never found in this country before. This and the 3 following days I preached at as many places as I could, though I was at first in doubt whether I could preach 8 days together, mostly in the open air, 3 or 4 times a day. But my strength was as my work. I hardly felt any weariness, first or last. Sunday the 11th, about 9 I preached at St. Agnes and again between 1 and 2. At first I took my old stand at Gwinnett, in the natural amphitheater. I suppose no human voice could have commanded such an audience on plain ground, but the ground rising all round gave me such an advantage that I believe all could hear distinctly. Monday the 12th, I preached about noon at Calstick, and in the evening at Curly. It rained all the time, but that did not divert the attention of a large congregation. At noon, Tuesday the 13th, I preached in Truro, and in the evening at Mevagissey. It was a season of solemn joy I have not often found the like. Surely God's thoughts are not as our thoughts. Can any good be done at Mevagissey? Friday the 16th, I rode through heavy rain to Polperro. Here the room over which we were to lodge being filled with pilchards and conger eels, the perfume was too potent for me. I was not sorry when one of our friends invited me to lodge at her house. Soon after I began to preach, heavy rain began, yet none went away till the whole service was ended. Saturday the 17th, when we came to Crimble Passage, we were at a full stop. The boatman told us the storm was so high that it was not possible to pass. However, at length we persuaded them to venture out, and we did not ship one sea till we got over. Sunday the 18th, our room at the dock contained the morning congregation tolerably well. Between 1 and 2, I began preaching on the quay in Plymouth. Notwithstanding the rain, abundance of people stood to hear, but one silly man talked without ceasing, till I desired the people to open to the right and left and let me look him in the face. They did so. He pulled off his hat and quietly went away. Wesley and Seaport Towns. Wednesday, November 30, I rode to Dover and came in just before a violent storm began. It did not hinder the people. Many were obliged to go away after the house was filled. What a desire to hear runs through all the seaport towns wherever we come. Surely God is besieging this nation and attacking it at all the entrances. Wednesday, December 14, I saw the Westminster Scholars Act, the Adelphi of Terence, an entertainment not unworthy of a Christian. Oh, how do these heathens shame us? Their very comedies contain both excellent sense, the liveliest pictures of men and manner, and so fine strokes of genuine morality as are seldom found in the writings of Christians. Chapter 15, Wesley opens a new church, comments on Rousseau, geology, Swedenborg, and riding horseback. Gweneth and 20,000 people, death of Whitfield. 1769, Monday, January 9. I spent a comfortable and profitable hour with Mr. Whitfield in calling to mind the former times and the manner wherein God prepared us for a work which it had not then entered into our hearts to conceive. Friday, February 17th, Yarmouth. I abridged Dr. Watt's pretty treatise on the passions. His 177 pages will make a useful tract of 4 and 20. Why do persons who treat the same subjects with me write so much larger books? Of many reasons, is not this the chief? We do not write with the same view. Their principal end is to get money, my only one to do good. Monday the 27th, London. I had one more agreeable conversation with my old friend and fellow laborer, George Whitfield. His soul appeared to be vigorous still, but his body was sinking apace. Unless God interposes, he must soon finish his labors. Wesley's Land Shark. Thursday, March 30th, Dublin. I was summoned to the court of conscience by a poor creature who fed my horses 3 or 4 times while I was on board. For this service, he demanded 10 shillings. I gave him 0.5 crown. When I informed the court of this, he was sharply reproved. Let all beware of these land sharks on our seacoasts. My scraps of time this week I employed in reading the account of Commodore Byron. It never before read of any who endured such hardships and survived them. Surely no novel in the world can be more affecting or more surprising than this history. Wednesday, April 19th, Armagh. We took horse about 10, being desired to call at Kinnard, 10 or 11 miles out of the way, where a little society had been lately formed who were much alive to God. At the town end, I was met by a messenger from Archdeacon C., who desired I would take a bed with him, and soon after by another who told me the Archdeacon desired I would alight at his door. I did so and found an old friend, whom I had not seen for 4 or 5 and 30 years. Wesley opens a new church. He received me with the most cordial affection and after a time said, "We have been building a new church which my neighbors expected me to open, but if you please to do it, it will be as well." Hearing the bell, the people flocked together from all parts of the town and received the word with all readiness of mind. I saw the hand of God was in this for the strengthening of his loving people. Hence we rode through a pleasant country to Claremont, where I preached to a very large and serious congregation. We were gathered near the fort, which has a ditch round it with some face of a fortification. It probably, according to custom, cost the government $1,000 a year for not 3 farthings service. Thursday the 20th, I went on to Castle Caulfield and preached on the green adjoining to the castle to a plain, serious people, who still retain all their earnestness and simplicity. Thence I rode to Cookstown, a town consisting of 1 street about 1 mile long, running directly through a bog. I preached to most of the inhabitants of the town, and so the next day, morning and evening. Many received the word with gladness. Perhaps they will not all be stony ground hearers. We took the new road to Dungiven, but it was hard work. Nigh foundered, on we fated, treading the crude consistence. We were nearly 5 hours going 14 miles, partly on horseback, partly on foot. We had, as usual, a full house at Londonderry in the evening and again at 8 on Sunday morning. In the afternoon we had a brilliant congregation. But such a sight gives me no great pleasure, as I have very little hope of doing them good. Only with God all things are possible. Both this evening and the next, I spoke exceedingly plain to the members of the society. In no other place in Ireland have more pains been taken by the most able of our preachers, and to how little purpose. Bands, they have none, 4 and 40 persons in society. The greater part of these heartless and cold, the audience in general dead as stones. However, we are to deliver our message and let our Lord do as seemeth him good. The Forsaken Beauty. Thursday, May 25th, I rode to Bandon. In the evening we were obliged to be in the house, but the next, Friday 26th, I stood in the main street and cried to a numerous congregation, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man." Ecclesiastes 12:13. Afterward I visited one that a year or two ago was in high life, an eminent beauty, adored by her husband, admired and caressed by some of the first men in the nation. She was now without husband, without friend, without fortune, confined to her bed, in constant pain, in black despair, believing herself forsaken of God and possessed by a legion of devils. Yet I found great liberty in praying for her in a strong hope that she will die in peace. Tuesday, June 37, from a letter to a pious and sensible woman. By Christian perfection, I mean, 1, loving God with all our heart. Do you object to this? I mean, 2, a heart and life all devoted to God. Do you desire less? I mean, 3, regaining the whole image of God. What objection to this? I mean, 4, having all the mind that was in Christ. Is this going too far? I mean, 5, walking uniformly as Christ walked. And this surely no Christian will object to. If anyone means anything more or anything else by perfection, I have no concern with it. But if this is wrong, yet what need of this heat about it, this violence? I had almost said fury of opposition, carried so far as even not to lay out anything with this man or that woman who professes it. Monday, July 3rd, I rode to Coolilo, where was the quarterly meeting, and preached at 11 and in the evening. While we were singing, I was surprised to see the horses from all parts of the ground gathering about us. Is it true, then, that horses, as well as lions and tigers, have an ear for music? Sunday the 30th. At 5 I preached at Leeds, and on Monday the 31st prepared all things for the ensuing conference. Tuesday, August 1st, it began, and a more loving one we never had. On Thursday, I mentioned the case of our brethren at New York, who had built the first Methodist preaching house in America, and were in great want of money and much more of preachers. Two of our preachers, Richard Boardman and Joseph Pillmore, willingly offered themselves for the service, by whom we determined to send them £50 as a token of our brotherly love. Wesley at the Countess of Huntington's. Wednesday, August 23rd, I went on to Trevecca. Here we found a concourse of people from all parts come to celebrate the Countess of Huntington's birthday and the anniversary of her school, which was opened on the 24th of August last year. I preached in the evening to as many as her chapel could well contain, which is extremely neat, or rather elegant, as are the dining room, the school, and all the house. About 9, Howell Harris desired me to give a short exhortation to his family. I did so, and then went back to my ladies and laid me down in peace. Thursday the 24th, I administered the Lord's Supper to the family. At 10, the public service began. Mr. Fletcher preached an exceedingly lively sermon in the court, the chapel being far too small. After him, Mr. William Williams preached in Welsh till between 1 and 2 o'clock. At 2 we dined. Meantime, a large number of people had baskets of bread and meat carried to them in the court. At 3 I took my turn there, then Mr. Fletcher, and about 5 the congregation was dismissed. Between 7 and 8 the love feast began, at which I believe many were comforted. In the evening, several of us retired into the neighboring wood, which is exceedingly pleasantly laid out in walks. One of these leads to a little mount raised in the midst of a meadow and commanding a delightful prospect. This is Howell Harris's work, who has likewise greatly enlarged and beautified his house. With the gardens, orchards, walks, and pieces of water that surround it, it is a kind of little paradise. Friday the 25th, we rode through a lovely country to Chief Stow. I had designed to go straight on, but yield to the importunity of our friends to stay and preach in the evening. Meantime, I took a walk through Mr. Morris's woods. There is scarcely anything like them in the kingdom. They stand on the top and down the side of a steep mountain, hanging in a semicircular form over the river. Through these woods, abundance of serpentine walks are cut, wherein many seats and alcoves are placed. Most of them command a surprising prospect of rock and fields on the other side of the river. And must all these be burned up? What will become of us then if we set our hearts upon them? The Gentleman with Rotten Eggs. Friday, September 8. I preached about 9 at Taunton and then rode on to Bridgewater. This afternoon I went to the top of Branch Hill. I know not that I ever before saw such a prospect. Westward one may see to the mouth of the Bristol Channel and the three other ways as far as the eye can reach, and most of the land which you see is well cultivated, well wooded, and well watered. The globe of earth in its present condition can hardly afford a more pleasing scene. Tuesday the 19th, between 12 and 1, I preached at Freshford on White's Hill, near Bradford, in the evening. By this means many had an opportunity of hearing who would not have come to the room. I had designed to preach there again the next evening, but a gentleman in the town desired me to preach at his door. The beasts of the people were tolerably quiet till I had nearly finished my sermon. They then lifted up their voices, especially one called a gentleman, who had filled his pocket with rotten eggs. But a young man, coming unawares, clapped his hands on each side and mashed them all at once. In an instant he was perfume all over, though it was not so sweet as balsam. Tuesday, October 24th. I preached at Alston in a large malt room, where one side of my head was very warm, through the crowd of people, and the other very cold, having an open window at my ear. Between 6 and 7 I preached at Northampton, and it was an awful season. This evening there was such an aurora borealis as I never saw before. The colors, both the white, the flame color, and the scarlet, were exceedingly strong and beautiful. But they were awful, too, and an abundance of people were frightened into many good resolutions. Wesley on Geology and Rousseau. Tuesday, December 26th, I read the letters from our preachers in America, informing us that God had begun a glorious work there, that both in New York and Philadelphia multitudes flocked to hear and behave with the deepest seriousness, and that the society in each place already contains above 100 members. Friday the 29th. We observed as a day of fasting and prayer, partly on account of confused state of public affairs, partly as preparatory to the solemn engagement which we were about to renew. 1770, Monday, January 1st. About 1,800 of us met together. It was a most solemn season. As we did openly avouch the Lord to be our God, so did he avouch us to be his people. See Deuteronomy 26, 17 and 18. Wednesday the 17th, in a little journey which I took into Bedfordshire, I finished Dr. Burnett's theory of the earth. He is doubtless one of the first-rate writers, both as to sense and style. His language is remarkably clear, unaffected, nervous, and elegant. And as to his theory, none can deny that it is ingenious and consistent with itself. And it is highly probable, 1, that the earth arose out of the chaos in some such manner as he describes, 2, that the antediluvian earth was without high or abrupt mountains and without sea, being one uniform crust enclosing the great abyss. 3, that the flood was caused by the breaking of this crust and its sinking into the abyss of water. And 4, that the present state of the earth, both internal and external, shows it to be the ruins of the former earth.